From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Cabot Creamery, one of several socially active food cooperatives. Details are at go.coop. That's go.coop.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's a to be raining out.
Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. It's then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. How you doing this beautiful October evening? This is the best time of year, I think. The best time of the entire year in the Northern Hemisphere, mid to late October, as we approach the Hunter's Moon coming up. And I don't know, I think it's going to be about 10 days. Anyway, it's just glorious, and we're coming out of rain and entering some warm weather for a few days. And you should be in the studio right now. The aromas are wonderful. I have somebody here in the studio with me I've wanted to have on for a really long time, John Raymond, a cheesemonger, and he's fiddling with the cheeses as we speak. Welcome to Mouthful, John.
Thank you very much.
Now, you are located, you have a little cheese shop in Glen Ellen in the Jack London Village?
I do, Jack London Village. We're in the vats, old fermentation vats in Jack London Village.
And tell me what you're slicing right now as I watch you.
Well, what I'm slicing now is a little cheese from Hope Farm in Vermont, and I'm just new to me. This cheese is called Pierce Hill, and I've sliced a few before that. So we're going to start with the softer ones, and we're going to go upstream to this one a little bit in a few minutes. It's a washed rind, rinsed curd cheese. hopefully we'll understand by the end of the hour what that means.
Before we start tasting, which is going to be kind of hard, but I'm going to restrain myself. Tell us when the shop in Glen Ellen opened and a little bit about how you got there.
Well, we've been struggling to open for about 2 years, believe it or not. We've been paying rent certainly for that long. And we started to do the renovations to the vats, four of them now. They're 10-foot square each, and they present their own special problems in that the geography and the flow of the layout and everything else. So what we decided to do was a European-style cheese shop. We don't have any display cases. We don't have any pre-wrapped cheeses. What we do is we take out the cheeses we love at the time and put them on our little 6-foot counters, and they're cherry wood counters, and we have concrete walls, and we have a chalkboard. And one day I'm going to get to putting signs up that tell people how much the cheese are, but they pretty well know that they're hideously expensive by the time they get to us, so they sort of give in to it gently. But that's about it.
Hideously expensive. What does that mean?
Well, I have one we're going to taste tonight. Probably the last one we'll taste tonight. It's $55 a pound, just to give you an idea.
Okay.
And our average price is in around the 40-ish mark right now. And basically, if you want great food, you're going to have to pay up there 30 plus.
Now, you were a cheesemonger before you actually opened the shop in Glen Ellen, correct?
I was. I spent 2 years at Dean & DeLuca over in Where is that place? Napa Valley.
St. Helena, right?
St. Helena.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can say that.
And I still live over there, and I love Napa Valley, of course. But I'm learning to love Sonoma Valley also. I had money put down on a shop in Napa, and we were paying rent. And then one of my regular St. Helena Farmers Market customers is from Glen Ellen, and she beat me up into coming over here. And finally, after about a year, I came over and looked at this little place, and I talked to Catherine Driggers next door to me at Olive and Vine, and I thought, my God, I'd love to be next to her, and this is such a beautiful place for my shop. There'd never been a shop in it before, but I went home and I dreamed about my cheese against the concrete walls, and I just started putting money down on that, which was a good deal because we got flooded out. That was the year of 2005, and we got flooded out in Napa. And I don't know if you know much about water, but water breeds a lot of aspergillus, among other things, and I didn't like that with the thought of that with my cheese. So, So we decided to give the Napa one a miss, which we could do because the landlord forgot to tell us we were in a floodplain and a few things like a few incidentals.
Yeah, one of those important things.
So we gave that a miss and threw our resources, what few resources we had, into Glen Ellen, and we put in, and we're still building it, and I reckon it'll take me another 3 years to get it the way I want.
Mm-hmm.
About to order the cheese aging cases, and so they're going to be everything's going to be custom built. A little bit of time, and just keep going. You have to have a 2 or 3 year plan when you do these things.
Now, does this mean you're actually not open yet?
Oh, yeah, we're open.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. Okay, so just getting to your
level
of perfection.
What I have now is I have converted refrigerators and walk-ins, which I have humidity in, et cetera. Are they ideal? Not really.
Uh-huh.
Not for perfectionists. So we're building in special cases, and as we build them in, we'll remove these other cases one at a time.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you get involved with being a cheesemonger and sort of developing your taste for the best cheeses?
Well, actually, I was an ad man. I was an advertising guy, and I walked into a cheese shop in the west of Ireland, and I was writing a brochure. I think it was on Lexus cars at the time. And I was in Galway City, and I walked into a shop called Sheridan's Cheesemongers, and I spoke to Seamus Sheridan, cheesemonger, and I walked out after listening to him, and I said, I'm going to do that. Did I do it right away? Not quite. I wrote quite a few brochures since then and quite a few bits of advertising, and now I can't write advertising at all.
So why don't you start by telling us what we should eat first on this beautiful array?
Well, there's a lot of people who are quite pedantic about what to eat first, etc., and you know, one being lighter than the other. But I consider all cheese to be on a ladder, and I think you can climb up the ladder or you can climb down the ladder. So you can start at the strong if you want and go down to the mild if you know how to do it. And what I do is I use a good quality brie to rebalance when we're going on to the next phase. And quite often I'll finish my tastings with a brie because they tend to coat the mouth an awful lot, and they act a bit like chocolate. They tend to neutralize a lot. And so I don't actually use them for my finer cheese tastings. I will use natural goat cheeses, of course, and chev, but I tend to stay away from the brie unless I just want to be wicked at home, and which I usually do on a Saturday night. So yeah. That's different altogether.
Wow, you said a lot there. I think if I asked you to explain everything, it would take up the whole hour.
What I'm going to do is start you with a very, very mild goat cheese.
Okay.
And this is a, I suppose, simple and directness would be what you'd want from this. This is Haiku from Barbara Bacchus and Goat Sleep in Napa Valley. Barbara has 14 purebred La Mancha goats, and that's a very important distinction because La Mancha have less protein and fat in them, and they tend to give you a little higher, a little lighter pastry type style cheese. And these are lactic fermentation cheeses. I told you, I warned you about this.
This is great.
I will talk forever on this. But a lactic fermentation cheese basically is one which relies upon the rennet, the residue rennet in the lactic cultures, to set the cheese. And it'll take 36, 48 hours for these cheeses to set, whereas the normal cheese can set inside 30, 40 minutes, just to give you an idea. But one of the key things about a lactic, one of the properties of a lactic fermentation cheese is, and they're not strictly lactic anymore because they pasteurize them and they add culture, so strictly speaking they're culture fermentation cheeses, but One of the things you look for is a directness and a straightness and a trueness of the milk. And so you don't want a lot of finish, and you don't want a lot of you don't want it to go on into the evening. You want a simpleness, and you want to do it with fairly simple and direct wines. I like lactic fermentation cheeses with Chablis style wines, for instance. And some brutes, they would go with just to tease them along a little bit. You don't want to get into too big a wine with them if you can. Some Pinots, quite a few Pinots, in fact. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you that one. That's Goat Sleep Haiku.
Goat Sleep Haiku. Mm. Now, for people who have seen goats, you know, a lot of goats, but don't necessarily distinguish breed when they see them, could you describe what a La Mancha looks like?
Now, La Mancha, it's actually a quintessentially American breed, but there are evidence of them in all breeds from all over the world, but a La Mancha is the one with the little stubby ears, and it looks like it's got cauliflower ear, and there will be various types, sizes of ear to the La Manchas. But Barbara, the lady that makes this cheese, Barbara Bacchus, she'd be a little bit nervous if I said this, but she's considered one of the world experts on La Manchas, which is an American breed, quintessentially California breed.
Mm-hmm. Now, they're the goats that, to somebody who is just casual in their observation, would say, wait, that goat doesn't have ears.
It's those, absolutely. Yeah. But you need to look a little bit closer. Yes. They do have stubby little ears, of course, and they breed them for those ears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you find mutants, as they call them, in various other herds throughout the world, including Africa and Europe and South America, but they don't really focus a breed on those ears, so there's just the odd one in the odd herd every now and then. So you won't see them in Europe or anywhere else in the world except for in the United States and specifically on the West Coast. So there you are. What do you think of that?
I think it's really beautiful, and I thought that description of just really straightforward, very focused. Very pretty.
Mm-hmm. Pretty, yeah.
Very
like
pretty.
A little flower. It's like eating a flower.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you another cheese, which is also lactic fermentation, made by a different cheesemaker, equally great, on a different milk. And these are made on Saanens, the next one. And Saanens have a lot higher butter fat and a lot different protein structure. And you're going to get a meatier taste to the milk. And you're always going to find the cheeses are going to be shorter. They won't be as high. And so what we're looking at here is Petit Marcel from Pug's Leap.
Pug's Leap, yes.
Pascal Deslandou and Eric Smith up in Healdsburg. And notice the rind on it is a little bit, more skin. It's looser skin on it. And it's I call it elephant skin. I don't know if anybody else uses that. But it's not as tight and structured as the rind on the Haiku. And that's part of that is due to Pascal's rinding. He's a very creative rinder, and he puts on these beautiful, exotic, esoteric rinds that only Pascal will ever do. And I think we need him in California very badly, because we were getting very safe with our rinding and with our cheeses, and he's come in and he's beautiful, dramatic. French.
Now, what's the process that lets that happen?
Well, what he's doing is he's hitting the geotrichum bottle quite heavy, and geotrichum's a little bit of a fungus, as it were, that helps create this little bit of a skin. Uh-huh. And it actually helps the candidum grow out over the top. In fact, geotrichum and candidum are quite often used together, mixed up. And they sew them. These two operators actually sew their mold-making gizmos actually into the milk itself, and then they come out and overtake the milk later, which is a technique I prefer. If you were doing a factory cheese, and indeed some that aren't considered factory cheeses, they actually spray them across the top, and they get more human rind, but they're actually quite high. And one of the reasons I like these is you get some Brevibacterium going on that cheese also. It's almost becoming a washed rind cheese. Most cheese is a balance. It's a balance between one or the other. If we keep that wrapped and keep that tight, the Brevies may take over. It depends upon how much candidum he's put in and what strain. But and so we could, in theory, it depends upon how he's made it, and we have to know how he's made it and finished it, we could, in theory, turn that into a little Epoisse if we wanted to. And we could reverse the project, the whole thing, and put it into a little brie style thing. It's depending upon what we want to let it grow, and I want to let grow on it. And that really, we do that by changing the atmosphere in which it is. Sometimes we reduce the humidity, sometimes we increase the humidity, sometimes we tighten down the wrapping, sometimes we loosen up the wrapping. The wrapping on these cheeses, all these softer cheeses, is there for a purpose. Quite often it's there to keep the rinds down on
And
on
by
these.
Keeping them down, you mean keeping them thin?
Keeping them thin. Okay. Because these are dry salted. I'm going to get to salting in a little bit, but these are dry salted cheeses. And one of the, every cheese, I suppose like every human being, every cheese has its own Achilles heel. And the Achilles heel to a dry salted cheese, am I talking too much?
Definitely not.
The Achilles heel to a dry salted cheese is that the rind can get very thick very quick. Now, it's illegal to have a Brie de Meaux or a Camembert de Normandy that is not dry salted, for instance. So they have to be dry salted, but they get... The problem with them is they get very thick very quick, and then you get that when they get thick and quick, the lawn grows on them, the Candida Milano, and you get that ammoniated up the nose taste.
By dry salted, I'm assuming you mean rubbed with salt rather than put into a brine. Is that correct?
Okay. You're absolutely right. Yeah, there are cheeses that are neither of those two, but we'll talk about them in due course. Okay. I hope. And if I don't, remember,
you'll just have to come back if we don't get there.
Yeah, if we don't get there. Yeah. So that's actually the difference. I don't even know how I got off onto that subject, but
you were talking about the
rind. Yeah, the rinding. So that's actually what's going on with Pascal's rinding. But you notice when you push your finger on it, it sort of it goes like skin. It just pushes up. Well, if you do that to the Haiku, it doesn't do that. See, it's sort of a little bit dry. But they're both dry salted cheeses. They're just different styles. And you know what's perfect about these cheeses? Each one of these styles fit the milk from the breed. And that's where we should be going with cheese, and so few people are. And that's what's magical about these guys, these two makers, and that's why I think they're great. Barbara's been at it for a long time. She started making cheese about the same year Laura Chanel did. That's a long way back.
This is Barbara Backus. She's over. Yeah. So she on the Atlas Peak?
No, she's on Spring Hill.
Oh, Spring Hill. Okay.
Yeah, that's Amy Wen's place over there.
Okay.
On Atlas Peak.
And what's the name?
And she's Sky
it's
Hill.
Sky Hill, that's right.
Yeah, in actual that's fact, right. they're... I don't want to say too much about that, but they're not made in Napa Valley, those cheeses. So,
I just remember being there one time, but yes.
And Amy's
that's right,
great.
Spring Mountain.
You know, and a great cheese.
Spring Mountain.
No, it's Sky Hill.
But the other...
Yeah, and Barbara's on Spring Mountain. That's
right.
Right. So that's the sort of... Pascal's been at it for about a year, but he's got quite a strong background, and so he'll be one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
let's taste that one.
Great. There you are.
Okay, and what is the name of this one?
This is called Petit Marcel, modeled on a Saint-Marcellin, if you will, from the Languedoc.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get meatier taste from it, more dense. You want to be thinking of different wine. You want to be going to a smoked Chardonnay if you had to do that, an oak Chardonnay, or you want to go into Syrahs maybe, like Cabs.
It's much denser. Meaty, I think, is another...
Meaty.
Good word.
I keep thinking turkey gravy with this cheese.
It's really,
but again,
really good.
Yeah, but again, it matches the milk from the breed. And there's so much going on here with feed behind the scenes that I don't think we have enough time to talk about it today, but maybe another time. They each feed differently, and they feed to the breed. And too few people do that.
And these are Sonnens.
These are Sonnens.
And how many does...
He says Toggenbergs, too, but I was up there last night. I didn't see any Toggenbergs.
How many does he have right now?
He's got 22 milkers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they always carry a few extra that are not milkers. So he's probably heard of about 26, 28 right now.
This has an interesting finish, too, that it's almost sweet, but in the way that spring grass is sweet, not in the way that sugar is sweet.
Precisely.
And that's really appealing.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
It's a really fresh finish.
Mm. Yeah. And that is Julie Atwood joining us a little bit. Thank you, Julie. Thank you for making this happen. Yeah. Julie Atwood, of course, of Atwood Ranch. Okay, why don't we take a little musical break, and we'll be right back with more talk with a John Raymond cheesemonger.
Thank you.
One of Mouthful's favorite sounds. What was the cork you just pulled?
Mayo. We're doing a Mayo. Julie, what are we doing here?
It's one of the Mayo Sangiovese's, and we brought two local wines, too. Sonoma Valley Wines, one from Mayo Sangiovese and the Adelsa Chardonnay. Nice to have a little earthy red and a higher acid wine to try with all these great cheeses.
And I should tell you while you're listening, if you want to take a look either now while we're talking or after at John Raymond's website, it is raymondscheesemongers.com. And it's a very, there's not a lot of information on there, but what is there is presented really elegantly. I really like the look of the website.
Thank you very much. What I tried to do with the website, and God knows I need to update it quickly, but what I tried to do is something that was simple and direct and straightforward without any gimmicks, and that's the way I like my cheese.
Mm-hmm.
We take the labels off all our cheeses before we present them in the shop so that people can actually see the rind of the cheese.
Which I think we have to add something more. You said simple, straightforward. You need one more adjective.
Direct.
Direct, but also elegant, pure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something that's really.
But there is a pureness in elegance, isn't there? An elegance in pureness. And yeah. I like the simple, straightforward. To me, that it's like a designer dress compared to a knockoff. You know what I mean? These are true foods, and I like them presented in an elegant way. But I like ways that celebrate their simpleness, and I suppose there's elegance in that. Yeah,
there is. Mm-hmm. There is. I think. What are your hours at the shop?
I think Julie will probably going to laugh at this.
At the cheesemonger's pleasure.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I almost said, do you keep regular hours? And I had a feeling that the answer
might
be...
He's in demand. He's out of his shop a lot.
I will eventually find enough staff to... It's been really difficult because it's Glen Ellen, and you could stand there for 4 days and not see anybody, and then you could have 100 people on one day.
Sure.
So it's really hard to get the pace of it right, but we will do. I mean, we've got a lot of people who like us locally, and we like them back. So
is to some degree it by appointment? Like, can somebody call you up and say, well, I'd really like to meet with you?
Monday and Tuesdays are by appointment for sure, and everybody... I would put my cell phone on the door, so that's fine. We try to be open Wednesday through Sunday, 11 to 5, but sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Don't try to get him in the mornings.
I don't like getting up. I really hate getting up in the morning.
You know, and that's why we work for ourselves.
Right.
Okay, so now you're cutting something that is semi-pyramid shape.
Yes, you know, it's what we call a truncated pyramid in the business, and there's a story about this cheese being made for Napoleon, and he was coming back from a disastrous Egyptian campaign, and he saw it, and he whacked the top of it off and with his sword because he was so upset and all of that. And that's great, basically a whole load of hogwash. And what it probably has to do more with is the reed baskets they were making these out of were easier to make that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that cheese has got six sides, and it's actually finished on all six. So they turn it. It doesn't always sit on the fat side. I turn it this way to age it for a while, and then this way, and then I put it on the head for a while.
Now, I should tell you that what is, you know, you're turning it and setting it on each of its open sides, and that's not just for stacking convenience. That actually has something to do with the way the cheese ages, correct?
Absolutely.
Could you explain how that functions?
Not shortly, but I will. Not in a few words, but... these cheeses are salted. Let's talk about salting for a minute. These cheeses are salted on one side only.
Oh.
They're not salted on all four sides. So when they salt them, they want to make sure they turn the cheese so the salt goes all the way through. And it really, really would... It does hydrolyze pretty quickly. But you need to keep turning it. And one of the... difficulties with these types of cheeses is sometimes people forget and salt the two sides and it just becomes very aggressive. And of course, that kills back the rennet because salt fights rennet. And I don't need to explain that, do I?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. Well, anyway, rennet's the thing that sets it and the salt will fight it back. So you want to be very careful about your salting, particularly on these cheeses that are meant to live under 60 days. And that's really important. And so you want to be a little light hand on the salt, but not too light. Now, if this cheese gets bitter and doesn't exhibit any sweetness, then it's been undersalted. And that's one of the key attributes of a of a chev, as it were, if they get too bitter. So that's one of the things we look for in them. And this cheese is a little bit higher, notice, nice and fluffy now. Pascal does a cheese like that also, and his comes out about that size. I'm sorry I didn't bring it now. But one of the reasons it comes out that size is it's just denser. And we're talking about the structures of the milk again. So, and Barbara has a very light hand in the making.
Now, is this another one by Barbara?
Yeah, it is. It's a Barbara Bacchus cheese again. I love her cheeses. This is one of the five cheeses now that I want to be buried with. And I have it written in my will.
You do?
I do.
Okay. And what? Tell us its name again.
This is called Sumi, S-U-M-I. And this is from Barbara Bacchus and goats at Goatsleep in St. Helena.
What kind of goats?
La Mancha again.
La Mancha again. This has a little bit more forward salt than Haiku.
And you're getting a little more rounded taste, and you're going to be getting a little finish on it. And really, when all those are characteristic of a rennet cheese, it's a rennet set curd.
What would you drink with this?
Oh, I love this. This is my Pinot cheese. I love this with Pinot. Actually, this Sanjo we're drinking with right now is great also.
I think you should open the Chardonnay, too.
Yeah.
I can use my water glass.
But it'd be a good Chardonnay cheese also. And it's got ash around it. And here's one of the key things about ash. People see an ash cheese. I must have had 30 of them in the shop today. They saw an ash cheese. They go, oh, my God, it's going to be too strong. It's blue. And all this routine. And, you know, if an ash cheese is the right age and is treated properly, it's the most gentle and beautiful and complex of all cheeses. Why do they put the ash on? I'm waiting for this. I'm only joking. I tend to ask questions a lot. One of the reasons, and I answer them too, and sometimes I don't answer them, but anyway, the ash is put on to, originally it was a preservative, and a preservative attempt, shall we say, and pretty poor one.
And when we say ash, what form is that ash in?
I love this question. Is it vegetable ash, people ask me? Well, I certainly hope so, because I'm not eating the other sort.
People actually ask you, is it vegetable ash?
Yeah, it's the number one thing.
Wow.
That they asked me. But it
that never occurred to me.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's eating a barbecue is eating ash, my God, and a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, I just wonder if when you're coating it with ash, what's it from? And well, I wonder because of the way that, I mean, I have a wood stove, so I deal with ash all the time, and some of it gets really muddy.
I'm going to investigate this further, but as far as I know, the ash is almost always bread ash.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
In fact, Pascal was experimenting for a while with ash from Preston's bread, but he never did come out with the cheese, so I'm just wondering if we're going to see it in a little while or what. But he's very experimental and enthusiastic that way, so I'm looking forward to his next innovation. But so the ones in Europe, anyway, were bread ash. You can actually buy this stuff in bottles now or in jars, and that's actually how people get it onto their cheese now. They buy a jar and put it on and don't know where it came from, and who cares, you know, let's go next.
Okay.
But the reason they put it on is it sort of holds these higher volume cheeses in place while the candida meringue goes out around them, you see, or whatever other rind there happens to be on there. I love this cheese with a little bit of penicillin candida on it, but I love it with a little bit of album also, which Barbara did about 4 years ago, and I can't get her to do again, so I'm going to do it in-house. Oh, my God. You put a little penicillin album on that, and that cheese just turns to magic. Oh, you will never forget the taste of it. It's nothing short of exquisite.
Now, when you say you're going to do it,
am I going to tell you how? No.
But you're going to tell us how, sort of generally, in that I think we're less familiar in America, even in California, we're less familiar with what it means to be someone who ages cheeses. I think if you've ever been to visit, say, Neil Jard or somewhere like that, you know a little bit more about it.
Right.
But are you going to become a cheesemaker, or are you going to age cheeses?
Well, I used to make cheese, but I'm not going to make it for the foreseeable future, but I've just eyeballed a creamery, so I don't know. I could change my mind on that, yes. I haven't told
you've heard it here first.
About this But I don't think we do enough soft ripened cheeses in California.
I'm with you all the way on that.
So that's a thought in the distant future. As far as finishing the cheese, I like them finished a certain way at a certain age. And we sell all our cheeses as many as we can at 2 or even 3 ages. And that really depends upon the people we're dealing with. I deal with a lot of chefs, and they want such and such a cheese at 30 days, another one overaged, another one with such and such on the rind. And what we do is we custom finish for them and tune that. And there are ways of getting mold on there. It's not as good as sewing the mold into the cheese itself, but there certainly are ways.
And by sewing, you're meaning S-O-W.
Yes.
Sewing into the, yes. You're not stitching it.
Yeah. And one of the things I'm frustrated about with my refrigerators, my converted refrigerators with humidity, is that I can't really season them properly. There's not enough wood in them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I impregnate wood with a certain mold, and I just put it in. And don't ever tell anybody from the FDA that I'm doing this. And
my lips are sealed.
Okay. And then I take it out when I want to change that.
Mm-hmm.
And the molds will rattle around the refrigerators for a while, but you can pretty well defog or clean out the refrigerators without a lot of trouble. Just with a standard... they'll always be there lurking in the background, but you can clean them out after if you want. So I have developed some seasoning sticks, as it were, and we just season the impregnate the wood and put it into the... Is it terribly efficient? Not really, but it more or less gets us there.
It's working
somewhat.
For now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you would buy really young cheeses from cheesemakers that you really like?
I always buy my cheese young, and I think I might be the only guy in the country doing that. Barbara's cheese is released at 10 days to me, and so is Pascal's. And I pretty well know how the inner rind creeps in on them, how old they are, and it depends upon what humidity and temperature they're at. But I have them fairly much under control. Right now we have about a 2-millimeter inner rind on this Sumi right now, and so that tells me we're in and around 22 days, and Barbara felt they were too young to release last week, and I would have loved them last week. I begged for them, and even a bottle of champagne didn't get me them, but it didn't matter. She knows what she's doing, and she releases it the day she wants. Pascal's a little bit different. He'll release them quite young to you, and he's quite happy for you to take over the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a difference in style more than anything else, and that's just the way they are. But I know how to work with Barbara and her cheese, so I know what to do with it, and she cold cures hers, and he hot cures his, by the way.
Cold cures at what temperature?
Around 40, 44.
And what does he do?
He brings, it's like going into a sauna. He brings his up to around 70. Yeah, Sally Jackson brings hers at 70, cures hers at 70. Yeah, it's quite a few people do.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't... Some people say it pushes on the curd faster, and therefore, you get the cheese out quicker and you make more money. But it's not really why he does it. He just likes the taste it gives you. It gives you that... It fits back to the breed.
It fits the breed of the goat better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly, his cheeses speak for themselves. They're
absolutely.
Really good.
Yeah. And they're improving all the time. And when people say, oh, my God, they're improving, that means that I suppose, implies that at one time they weren't good. But that's not true. They were different before. And these guys have changed their formulas this year 3 times. And very few people know that. And it looks like the same cheese. Oh, I'm going to go down and buy a Pug's Leap. Well, it's not the same Pug's Leap you bought last month, I assure you. They're tinkering with their formulas the whole time. And that's just the way they do it. But they have this taste profile that's built up in their mind. And they pretty well know when they've achieved it. And sometimes it's on target, sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're tasting these cheeses every day and every week, you pretty well can taste the differences. You can taste the addition of a certain lactic culture or a change in rennet or something like that. You can definitely do that.
Mm-hmm.
On changing rennets, Jamie Montgomery was talking, Montgomery Cheddar Somerset, who used to be the best cheddar maker in the world.
Yes. Yeah, we had Susan from cheese shop in Healdsburg on a long time before she moved to Oregon, and she would always bring Montgomery cheddar with her.
I've got a better one, I think, and it's made in Wisconsin, but we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah.
Okay, so what are we tasting next? Because it looks like we still have 4 cheeses to taste. So.
No, you've got 6. You've got to tell me when to stop here. And
no, you're not stopping.
Okay. This is the cheese I'm experimenting with right now, and I don't know a lot about it except for I know the couple, and I've talked to them for a couple of months, and I love this cheese a lot. And this is from Hope Farm in Vermont. And this is...
Now, this is much bigger.
Yeah,
it's round. It has a hard rind.
About 1.5 inches high, and this is the rinsed curd. Sorry, yeah, rinse, curd, washed, drying cheese, a little bit of red to it, and it's a sheep's milk cheese, and it's made in East Charleston, Vermont, and there's a little piece for you. It was exhibiting a little bit of salt earlier. I don't know if it still is.
I love this cheese.
Well, it's called Pierce Hill.
It's very nutty.
Hmm. There's a degree of magic going into that cheese. I always like you like that too, don't you, Jim?
I love this
cheese. It's a beautiful
cheese. With Robert Hunter's sparkling wine. It's one of
really
my favorite
good
combinations.
Yeah, is it?
No, this is beautiful.
And a cheese that was showing very well today is a first cousin of that, and this one's called Tom de Brebis, made by the same people, and this is sheep's milk also. This is a little Tom de Savoie sort of rind on it, and I love Tom de Savoie cheeses, and maybe I love them because they're so hard and so fussy. I hope that wouldn't be the reason, but they're really hard to work with.
In what way?
Well, they can't take plastic. They hate...
I wouldn't think you had plastic anywhere near.
Oh, I do. We use plastic on the big ones for sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They can't take plastic. They absolutely abhor wax. So it begs the question, what do you do with them?
Uh-huh. And what do you do?
I'm not going to tell you. Why should I tell you? No. I will tell you, of course.
Because you're on the radio.
I actually age these guys in wooden wine boxes. And I do some of the smaller shows, too. Yeah. Mm.
And that has a lot of aesthetic appeal as well.
Yeah, but it keeps the humidity in.
Uh-huh.
Mm. And it lets the rind bloom just a little bit. You really have to be an expert to get that rind to a certain level. I don't know if I'm there yet. I've only been working on it for 8 or 9 years now.
This is... It's really, really, really good.
Julie's pointing at the Chardonnay for this. You don't mind sharing my glass, do you?
I do not.
Okay.
The thing that I like about that, how old is this cheese about?
Oh, that guy's about 78, 79 days.
Okay. Because if you don't hurry, if you take a bite and then you just, like, have a little patience, in the finish, it's like this, it blooms with a taste of fresh milk. And that's really beautiful.
And the other thing you can taste on this cheese, that's absolutely true, and the other thing you can taste on this cheese is tons of grass. These animals are on grass all year round. They won't, I don't know if you know much about sheep, but sheep have a lot shorter lactation than do goats or cows. Goats and cows have a 10-month lactation, which is why the season is so long. We're going to be coming to the end of goat cheese season in Northern California very shortly. But these guys have a lactation period of 2 to 3 months, sheep do. And they're also really weird to milk. You've ever seen anybody milk a sheep?
I have.
Yeah, between the legs, behind, oh my God, it's dreadful.
And I mean, they give a lot less milk.
Of course they do, yeah. So there are all sorts of issues. So they tend to make cheeses that will age on a little bit and they can add some value to it, basically, is what it boils down to. There's one or two sheep milk producers in the country. Willow Hill Farm from Vermont makes brilliant little soft ripe and Brebis from it, and so does the great Pierre-Louis Montier up in Walla Walla. He makes some great and exotic little soft ripe and Brebis, but generally speaking they tend to go with a little larger cheese, one that can add a little bit more value for it, the cheese itself.
Yeah, this is just really, really extraordinary.
Let's compare that to another sheep's milk cheese just for the fun of it.
You love those sounds. Wine pouring, a knife going through cheese.
Nearly my hand. This is probably the most famous of all the Vermont Shepherds, and this is Vermont Shepherd from Major's Farm. There's also Vermont Shepherd from Bob Work's Farm, which I've had in at times. And this is from David Major's Farm, though. And it's one of my favorite cheeses on the face of the earth.
We're ignoring my hard-working engineer
here.
Should
start.
Lawrence, would you like some cheese?
feed that man. Feed that man.
Okay, so tell us one more time the name of this cheese.
No, I can't. My mouth is full. It's David Major's.
David Major's.
A Vermont Shepherd. And we should have it with both wines. I wonder, do people like to listen to us chew? They don't really, do they?
Mm. You know, maybe we need to ask for email comments on that.
Because it would irritate the daylights out of me, I can tell you right now. I had a guy in my
They know
shop.
It's live radio.
Yeah, I know. I had a guy in my shop earlier today, and he smacked his lips, and it was really irritating me. I
hope he's not listening.
Yeah, I didn't throw him out, though.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, who are your customers? Are your customers who...
My customers
stumble upon you or seek you out?
My customers are the greatest people on earth. They really are. Because they'll pay anything for cheese, and you're going to see some examples of that. This is $48 a pound, by the way, this cheese. And you're going to see some examples of that. But it's that they're driven by taste, and there are people that are driven by taste. And a lot of them, you can see them sort of awakening. Just as we're talking to them, you can see them awakening to what's behind this, much the way I was 14 years ago in a Sheridan's Cheesemongers in Galway City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can just see the eyes just lighting up. Oh, my God, there's more to this than just throwing food in your face.
I love to introduce people to John and his cheese. We have clients who've been up here all week from L.A., and they have either been in or had John bring cheese to them every day for four
really?
Days.
Yeah, that's great. Right. Yeah.
I want you to describe this cheese, because I don't think I will do it justice.
Well, Julie's probably better at descriptors than I am, but this is modeled on a Pyrenees cheese. This is where Cindy Major learned to make cheese in the Pyrenees. And all you need to do is look at this cheese. If you could take one of my courses, what I do is I give you that to look at, and you have to mm-hmm. tell me what the cheese, what milk is on the cheese and within 20 miles of where it was made. And you can do it. It's very easy once you know how.
Once you know how.
But so it's very much a Pyrenees style in the vein of Osso Irati or Abbey de Blanc, and in fact it's a higher quality than Abbey de Blanc. There's preservative in Abbey de Blanc right now. Can you believe it? Why would Benedictine monks put
preservatives in their cheese?
I don't know. They haven't answered my emails yet. We're working at them. I don't give up. I'm relentless.
You know, it looks to me very much like a mountain cheese.
It is.
Yeah, the finish on it.
It's got all
it.
That going on.
It's
like,
it's clearly a mountain cheese.
Yeah.
And it tastes like walking into a room where things are fermenting.
In a really good way. I know what you mean. I got a little lemon on that earlier today, but I don't seem to be getting it right now. I'm getting more of a deep, rich soil taste from it right
mm-hmm.
now.
I can see it. Leather.
Julie's saying leather. That's a possibility.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
I'm going to give you one more sheep's milk. And the reason I'm doing this is we're coming into sheep's milk season and out of goat season. So we're starting to see a lot of sheep's milk cheeses. This one, however, was produced all summer. And here you're going to get a difference in the types of sheep. You're looking at mainly Suffolk, some East Friesian, and a few black-faced for the Vermont Shepherd. You're looking at this cheese, which we're bringing up now, is called Rinconada Dairy's La Panza Gold.
And where is this?
This is made by Christine McGuire in Santa Margarita in San Luis Obispo. And she's the second sheep milk producer in California. Bellwether Farms. Of course, was the first. And they're still great. It's just I don't have any of their cheese at the moment. But she produces this little Pyrenees style. I suppose you could call it a petit basque, an American petit basque, but it's like that. It's got a little basket on it. It's got the same basket weavings as a petit basque would. It's roughly the same shape and size. It's also hideously expensive, but why not? Life is short. It's made on milk of a different breed of sheep. You're looking at complete crossbreed between East Friesian and Lacaun. And Lacaun are the sheep that provide the milk for the Roquefort. So they take a lot of heat. They're usually in Corsica, Aquitaine, that sort of thing. So they take very intense heat. Whereas Suffolks don't necessarily like that much. East Friesian is an anomaly. I don't know. I have to ask Christine more about it. There's quite a few herds, actually, of these in the United States, and I hadn't realized, actually, until I started researching it. It's lovely, though, isn't it?
It's lovely. I'm trying to... It reminds me of something, and I'm not sure what it is. So we're going to take a musical break and figure that out. We'll be right back here on Mouthful. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It is KRCB Public Radio for Sonoma County. This hour is flying by, and that's because my guest, the cheesemonger John Raymond, with a little shop in Glen Ellyn and a very elegant website, raymondcheesemongers.com, is just, I mean, I think this could go on for several hours. Maybe we should just hijack Outbeat. They'd probably get mad at us. So what are you slicing up now?
I'm slicing up a cheese from Cache Valley, Utah, which is called Snow Canyon Edam, or Edam, as they would say. And it's made by a young couple, Peter Schropp and his wife, in Cache Valley, and they have two cows, two brown Swisses, Bruno Alpino, which I would prefer to say. And they he's Dutch, and he's decided to introduce, he's not the first, and he's not the only one, but he's decided to introduce some of these wonderful, super-aged, raw milk, Northern European-style cheeses into our repertoire, and I think he was right to do so. And what makes this better than most of the cheeses coming from Holland is this is raw milk, and the ones coming from Holland are all pasteurized. It's illegal to make a raw milk cheese in Holland anymore.
It is?
It is. So those big Dutch Goudas with the explosions of thymus and all over them are...
When did that happen?
Well, quite some time ago.
Yeah, what's wrong with those people?
I know.
I mean, a lot of other things are legal there.
I know.
I'm really surprised that raw milk cheeses are not okay.
Mm.
And what things still stand in the United States, it has to be aged over 60 days, right?
60-day rule, which I don't even want to talk about that right now. Can I not talk about
that? Okay, we'll talk about that when you come back.
Okay.
That is... to die for.
That's lovely. I'm going to now give you two cheddars.
Okay.
Both are bandaged, so-called bandaged cheddars.
Bandaged?
Bandaged or cloth-bound.
Okay.
And they're made in the same mode as Jamie Montgomery's Montgomery cheddar, or indeed Keene's cheddar, or Isle of Mull, all those Neil's Yard type things. This one is from Fiscalini Farms, and it's made by a great cheesemaker, Mariano Gonzalez, who himself is from Uruguay, funny enough, and he is one of the best cheesemakers I've ever encountered. That's really hard to say best because there's so many good ones out there, and they all are great at their own specific things. This is an 18-month from a 50-pound wheel on Holsteins, and this is all very important because I'm going to explain why in a minute.
So 50-pound wheel, Holstein, there are two cows.
Mm-hmm. The previous one was two cows.
The one I just ate was two cows. Okay.
It was about a herd of about 300. And this is John Fiscalini, a great farmer. But one of the differences, these cows never see grass. Yeah. They get fed on corn and various other pellets and stuff. And so they get very high-quality feed. He's very, very particular. But I think it's a testament to how great Mariano is, given the taste that he's eked out of Holstein milk to start with, because they don't yield the most characterful of milks, frankly. And what Jamie Montgomery did, and very few people know, is he interbred his Holsteins in Somerset with Ayrshires for a good number of years. It took them two generations. In fact, he didn't even start it, his mother did. And they started after the war interbreeding Holsteins and Ayrshires to gain a little more character to the milk. And I think that's really... where a lot of Americans are going to now.
Now, I'm going to ask you about Montgomery. You're almost talking about them in past tense?
No.
Okay.
No, he's still, I think, the ultimate artist when it comes to cheddars. And I think one of the reasons is he has control over things that people like Mariano haven't, like grazing. He's replanted his pasture several times to exhibit only Somerset-type grasses and all of this routine. And he's got a great manager from his herd. Here's something else you don't know about him. He has sort of a sourdough method for his lactic cultures, which start his milk. And he actually has a little laboratory on the farm where they draw out the both the lactic cultures and the rennets, and they use different ones for different days of the week or different temperatures. And so this guy is the ultimate artist, as far as I'm concerned, and everybody should be measured against him, frankly. And here's one we're going to measure against him right here. And this guy is from Unhappy Cow Country, Wisconsin.
Unhappy Cow Country.
This is Wisconsin.
As opposed to California Happy Cows.
Yes, because they get more cold weather and usually more hot
weather.
They
live here in California. Where it's
actually, these are the
fun.
Happiest cows I've ever seen. And he's actually, this is very rare cheese, and I almost don't even want to tell you the name of it because this guy's going to be bugged by telephone calls.
Okay.
I've had the privilege of tasting this cheese, I think, 3 times in the last week and a half.
I love this cheese.
Here's your bribe, Lawrence. Okay, you don't want to tell us the name, so right now we're tasting the no-name cheddar.
We are. It's made on a 10-pound wheel. Isn't it so beautiful and complex?
Mm. And it
it's only 18 months old, but it's a 10-pound wheel.
How old?
18 months. Same as the other one, but it's a 10-pound wheel, so a 10-pound cheese aged for 18 months will show more intensity and complexity than will a 50-pound wheel, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that gorgeous?
It's absolutely beautiful.
And like most cheeses, it doesn't have a singular dead on the palate taste. It roams on. It moves on to a middle palate and to a second palate and a third palate, and it finishes. Oh, my God. It's just, oh, my. This is one I want to be buried with. This
seduction.
Is another one.
This is another one. So if somebody wanted this cheese, what would they ask for?
I'm not telling you.
Seduction cheese.
Have to ask.
No name cheese.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you how rare this cheese is.
How much is it a pound? Start
$55. That's my most expensive cheese. I took a wheel and I've been negotiating it since January.
And I've been negotiating a wheel since January?
Mm-hmm. And I took a wheel in 2 weeks ago. And I phoned up the cheesemaker, and I showed rather too much excitement, and he increased the price per pound, $2 a pound, right then and there. But he makes little 10-pounders, and they have a name for it in Wisconsin, which I have forgotten, I'm ashamed to say, and so I'm going to get back on to him on Monday and find out what it is. But in England, they call these truckles, but it's not a truckle because it's a little bit flatter, but they have a specifically Wisconsin name for it. But I got on to him, and I said, well, how many wheels have you got? And he said, I have 100. And I said, okay, I will give you cash in advance for half of those right now.
Wow. Did it take you up on it?
No. Of course not.
Of course not.
So what he did was he sent me 4 at a lot higher rate. And he said we would negotiate after Christmas if he had any left. And I'm only praying. I'm writing to everybody in that area saying it's a terrible cheddar so that there's some left over in January.
So we won't tell anybody.
No, I adore this. Isn't that a gorgeous cheese?
It's absolutely gorgeous. And you know, we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. So you have to come back.
No, I will,
please.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. We have to come back. There's so many cheeses I want to ask you about, and we really don't have time. What I want to tell people, in the Jack London Center in Glen Ellen, Monday and Tuesday by appointment, usually 11 to 5-ish the rest of the week, and your website, raymondcheesemongers.com. And I noticed on the website it says order cheese. So this means you do mail order?
We do.
And will you do it anywhere in the country?
We absolutely will.
Okay, so there you go. If you love cheese and you're not getting cheese wherever you are in the United States, check out RaymondCheeseMongers.com. And on that note, Julie Atwood, thank you so much for coming along.
We may be doing some cheesemaker dinners this winter.
Great, and you do classes as well.
We do, but I'm getting tired with that, so I'm not going to do that anymore.
Oh, okay. So
I'm not learning enough from it.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll look for the cheesemaker.
Parties with cheese.
We're going to do a cheesemaker dinner this winter at Julie's.
Okay, will you let me know?
You'll be the first on the list.
Okay, and on that note,
can't have a party without you.
Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I'm Michelle Jordan. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at acura.com.